Good evening. How are you? Good evening. We'll be starting in a minute or two. Please join me in saying the Anna Bakoa. Anna Bakoa.
Gadula Chimeneca.
Ich werde hier noch ein paar Zeit. Averina.
Relat Hamas.
Feinu.
Feinu.
Fresh iron, sentet nun. Nagibor.
Gibor, Dorshe,
Nun Gimel Dalet, Yud Kaf Shin. Barchem Taharem.
Haaretz, Naicha Vadai,
v'shavta ha'aretz, Shabbat Lashem, Shabbat Lashem mamash. Come and behold, when Israel entered the land, there were no lower judgments. Judgments of the female found in it, and the congregation of Israel, being Malchut, was resting upon the wings of the cherubs. As they said, righteousness lodged in it. Then she had respite from them all, for Israel did not sleep until they offered the twilight sacrifice, and judgments were dismissed. The burnt offering was consumed upon the altar. Then she had respite from all, and there was only a wife with her husband. This is the essence of when you come to the land. Then shall the land keep a Shabbat. Then the land will rest, true rest without judgments. Then shall the land keep a Shabbat to Hashem, meaning a Shabbat to Hashem literally, without any judgments. This is an amazing Zohar, teaching us, number one, that it is possible to not have any judgments. It is possible to live your life without judging another person. It is possible to have a night's sleep, a night of enjoyment with your wife that has no judgment, just pleasure. Although ultimately that pleasure, that mutual pleasure, is a form of judgment. It's the reward, it's the effect of all of those positive things that you've done in your life that day. Does anybody have any questions? Well, it's been a while since we've done a reincarnation class. So we are beginning, this is the, I believe, the ninth class of Advanced Reincarnation. And we are starting Chapter 3 tonight. To remind everyone, we are reading a English translation, serialized version of the Gate of Reincarnations, Sha'ar Gilgulim, that was written by Rabbi Chaim Vital and edited or amended by his son Shmuel Vital, all on the teachings of Rabbi Isaac Luria. The translation at this point is by Rabbi Shabtai Teicher. During the process of the translation, he passed away, and it has then been completed by Rabbi Peretz Arbach, although we have not reached the point where that took place. Before I start reading, does anybody have any questions on any subject? I'm hoping you're remembering the chapters 1 and 2, because the way the Kabbalah works, you receive information about a subject that doesn't make any sense to you. It's not meant to make sense to you. And then you receive information about another subject, and that also doesn't make any sense to you, but it especially doesn't make sense trying to tie it to the first subject. And this goes on for a number of subjects until eventually the subjects start being tied together. You start making the connection of how they work together, how they are meant to be together. It's not your teacher who does this. It's your spiritual growth. Chapter 3, Section 1 is titled An Ibur While Alive. If you'll remember, the word Ibur means pregnancy. And it's referring to a soul of a righteous person who comes to assist you. Here it's saying an Ibur while alive. Iburs take place during a person's lifetime, as we have already mentioned. In Chapter 2, Section 3, it was written, they will reincarnate into the body of this person while he is still alive, the nefesh of a righteous tzaddik. This is called Ibur, and more specifically, Ibur while alive. The difference between this type of Ibur and a Gilgul was also explained there. The difference between a Gilgulim and an Ibur, there are some differences that are easily discussed and described, and I'm not going to do that here. But the basic difference is an Ibur doesn't stay around. You go to sleep one night, and when you wake up, there's an Ibur. It's within your soul, connected to your soul. It came to assist you in doing a mitzvah, in doing an action, in doing a good deed that will happen that day. And once that action is over, it leaves. It's not stuck with that body. I should say it's not chained with that body, like a gilgulim, like a reincarnation. Reincarnation cannot go anywhere until the body dies, which is an interesting aspect for you to contemplate, and which medical science is struggling with. What constitutes actual death? When the soul leaves? Or does the soul leave as an effect of the body being dead? Normally, Iburs take place during a person's lifetime. It involves parts of soul that come to a person years after he is born. Gilgul, on the other hand, involves parts of a soul that a person is born with. They reincarnate from the time he is born, and they stay with him until the end of his lifetime. Later on in this chapter, there will be introduced a new concept of Ibur from birth, and it will be explained there. God willing, when we come to it, the subject of this section, however, is the normal type of Ibur. Sometimes a certain mitzvah may come before a person, and he performs the mitzvah as it should be done. At that point, the nefesh of an earlier righteous person who had performed the same mitzvah correctly will join the person as an Ibur, since they are alike with respect to this one mitzvah. Thus, the actual mitzvah to be performed affects which righteous soul will join a person as an Ibur. It's interesting to contemplate. What's written here is just amazing. What's affinity? What's love? In the spiritual realm, affinity, love, is what defines the distance between things. So that receiving and giving or sharing are clearly opposites. They're far from each other. There's no love there. There's no affinity there. But now along comes this concept that there's a mitzvah. The doing of a mitzvah creates affinity, creates love. That's what's being said here. That's an overwhelming concept. And it also means that if you do a mitzvah number one and mitzvah number 17, that you might have love between two different people. But because you have love between those two people, they will have love for each other, even though they have no affinity from the standpoint of doing a mitzvah in their lives. These are very deep concepts that people need to contemplate. I'm continuing to read. Now, as we are learning that the Ibor can even come from a living, righteous person, not only this, but it is also possible that the righteous person is alive during his lifetime, and still an Ibor can occur. A spark or an aspect of the righteous person's soul, while he is alive, will leave and connect to the person who needs the help in doing the mitzvah. That's also kind of overwhelming.
Hello.
How are you?
I'm good, thank you. How are you?
I'm doing well. We're starting to read from the handout, which is at Advanced Reincarnation 7.htm, yashem.com/Advanced Reincarnation 7. Each word and number is separated by a hyphen. By now, you all should be familiar with that structure. Thus, if a person performs a particular mitzvah or mitzvot relevant to a righteous individual who also performed those mitzvot correctly, then the nefesh of that righteous tzaddik can enter the person even while they are both alive at the same time. My commentary. How can this be? It is because there are 613 parts of each level of soul. So one part of a soul becomes an Ibor, and the other 612 parts of the soul remain as a Gilgul in the original body. Up until now, we knew that an Ibor occurred in a living body after birth, but with the soul of a righteous person who has already died. Now we are learning that the Ibor can even come from a living, righteous individual. This is the secret meaning of the verse. The nefesh of Jonathan became attached to the nefesh of David, a verse in Samuel. People don't read that verse in that way. They don't read it as the nefesh. It gets translated as the soul of Jonathan became attached to the soul of David. And chas v'shalom, I've even heard people who have an agenda relating to homosexuality to describe that David and Jonathan were homosexual lovers. Chas v'shalom. If you have an agenda, if you have a preconceived perception of what you want to hear the Torah say, it will say it to you. But if you want to know the truth, approach the Torah with an open mind and a willingness to hear the truth, and a willingness to change yourself based upon that truth. In other words, even while they were both alive, the Nefesh of David was joined with Jonathan as an Ibur. Now, what was the mitzvah that they were needing to do? So far, we haven't been told. This accounts for the strong soul bond that they had while they were alive. Rabbi Chaim Vital, who recorded these words, says it appears that one mitzvah performed correctly is enough to initiate the Ibur. It is not required that he have performed all the mitzvot to this point. My commentary. Up to this point, we are not being told why the soul relationship happens. What is its purpose? Obviously, the Ibur supports the Gilgul in the doing of some other action. The reason for the two souls to bond is due to the one mitzvah that they both did separately. This brings them together for another purpose. This creates affinity with them. So, Abraham Avinu died 3,000, 4,000 years ago. But I can receive a Nibur from Abraham Avinu. There's no affinity between me and Abraham Avinu, Chas v'Shalom, there should be. But I'm so lowly, I can't make that connection. I don't understand it. But Abraham Avinu did a mitzvah. He ate kosher food. He ate food in a kosher manner. The Torah attests to that. We'll discuss that when we discuss our kosher food in the basic course that's going on now. Since I eat kosher food, if I eat that food properly with the proper kavanah and the proper intention and the proper action and the proper blessings before and after, and I do that mitzvah totally properly, I create affinity, I create love between Abraham Avinu and myself. And I create the opportunity for Abraham Avinu to come help me do some form of chesed that he was known for. The Effect of the Sin of Adam, Chapter 3, Section 2. With respect to the concept of Gilgulim, we will begin the discussion with Adam HaRishon, the first man, to more easily grasp the matter. To begin with, when Adam HaRishon sinned, he blemished all the sparks, the nitzotzut, or actually nitzotzot, of his nefesh, of his ruach, and his neshama. Just like a person's body contains many sparks throughout the 248 limbs and 365 tendons, and consequently there are many sparks in his head, in his eyes, and in every limb, it is the same with a nefesh as well. The human body is composed comprised of the 248 limbs and the 365 tendons, or sinews. And as such, they denote the form or the shape of the human body. The body is composed of holy sparks dispersed throughout it and within its limbs. The nephesh is in the same shape as the human body. More correctly said, the human body is in the same shape as the nephesh. The body is composed of holy sparks that are dispersed throughout it and within every one of its limbs. It is exactly the same with the nephesh, only more ephemeral. I'm looking for a way to explain ephemeral. More spiritual.
Yes, I believe so.
You want to say something?
No. No, I say okay. That I understand that word. Mm-hmm.
Okay, well, I don't. That's why I was struggling to come up with a description for it, but I think I did by saying spiritual. When Adam HaRishon, the first man, sinned, he blemished all the sparks throughout the spiritual form of his nephesh and his ruach and his neshama as well. To explain this, the Arizal now digresses to a deep explanation of the Midrash. The Midrash Tahuma from Ki Tisa and the Midrash Rabbah from Exodus provide an explanation for the verse from Job. Where were you when I founded the earth? That verse from Job occurs when Job is talking to God and questioning God, how can you do this to me? How can you have my children die, my money disappear? All of this chaos and this healing issue, how can you do this to me? And God's answer to him is, where were you when I founded the earth? Job is complaining about his lot and arguing with God. He answers him, where were you when I founded the earth? In other words, God is answering Job that he has no right to question God unless he also knows from what part of the soul of Adam that the spark that constitutes Job's soul originally came. If he does not know from where his soul was hewn, then he does not know his own history. Consequently, he can never fully understand the things that are happening to him. This is a very important concept in our study of reincarnation. The sole purpose of studying reincarnation is to find out what is our soul root so we can understand our history completely. And therefore, we can address the issue, what did I do wrong in my previous lifetime that is causing me to have this wake-up call today? I've gone through 60 years of life. I may have gone through 60 years of life in my last incarnation. And all these 120 years, there's been this chaos waiting for me to do teshuvah. But since I didn't do it yet, it comes and manifests in my body. And how am I to know what it is that I did wrong, that what is the chaos, what is the wake-up call telling me, if I don't know my history, if I don't know what I did last lifetime? By the same token, each lifetime is a mirror image of the lifetime before it. So I don't need to know what I did in a previous lifetime to the last lifetime. It's a waste of my time and my energy to try and figure out that I was a princess living in Rome 50 lifetimes earlier. It doesn't help me. Because the last lifetime, that's the mirror image of all of my previous lifetimes. Everything that happened in a previous lifetime also happened in my last lifetime. So I just need to know what I did last time. And I also need to know what is the root of my soul in Adam. When Adam was created, the Holy One, blessed be He, showed him every righteous person who would ever descend from him. Actually, the Midrash starts off by quoting a verse from Ecclesiastes. That which was, it was already called by name from the beginning, and it is known that it is Adam. In other words, all that exists was already called by name from the beginning, and that beginning or source is Adam HaRishon when he was created. And before he was created, while the worlds were going through the creation of the worlds, Adam was not yet created. Yet he was known. The essence of him was there waiting for its revelation. When Adam was created, the Holy One, blessed be He, showed him every righteous person who would ever descend from him, from his head, his hair, his neck, his two eyes, and from his nose. His ruach is also divided in this way, as also is his neshama. Every part of Adam, all 613 parts, has a soul root. And people are descended from that soul root, and they need to know from where in Adam they come from. From the sparks that comprised all the various limbs of the nefesh, ruach and neshama of Adam, were descended the souls of all the people that would exist throughout history. When he sinned, he blemished the majority of the sparks of his nefesh, his ruach and his neshama, causing them to become immersed in the klipot. The klipot are the husk or the shells that imprison the fallen holy sparks. When Adam sinned, the holy sparks of his nefesh, his ruach and his neshama, fell into the klipot. In the sense in which it is being used here, the concept of klipot refers to the entire realm of evil into which the souls and the divine presence have been exiled. This realm is the mirror image of the realm of holiness, Kedusha, but in the depths of spiritual impurity. We don't really understand that. But if we contemplate it, we can get close to it. Let me give you an example. I'm digressing from the paperwork here. But let me give you an example to consider. Many people become very attached to their house pets, a dog or a cat or a bird. That attachment may very well be connected to the fact that that animal has a soul that is still connected to the klipa. While the human being has cleansed certain aspects of the klipa, because both souls, the soul that's in the atom, in the animal, and the soul that's in the human, fell into the klipa, some deeper than others. The souls and the animals in our generation fell deeper than the souls of the human beings of our generation. But it doesn't mean that they're not connected to. And that's why you find people purchasing animals and falling in love with their animals and doing all these crazy things with their animals. The Divine Presence is exiled amongst the Klipot. This is the secret of what is it written in the Sefer HaTikkunim, on the verse, like a bird that wanders from her nest. The Divine Presence is exiled amongst the Klipot. The souls of the righteous Tzaddikim wander after her from place to place. Now, what is place to place? Is it a body? Or a physical location, or a spiritual location. This is talking about a quality naturally inherent in a human being that allows him to return to his creator as a bird does to its nest. The deeper meaning of the verse refers to soul sparks of righteous people pursuing God while they are within the realm of the Klipot. The place to which the sparks are exiled in the realm of the Klipot is according to the aspect of the soul of Adam from which they have come. If they have come from the head, then they are exiled into the head of the Klipot. If from the eyes, then to the eyes of the Klipot. This is the secret of the idea of the exile of the souls that is mentioned there, their meaning in the Midrash. But this is a whole different understanding. Typically, when we think of Klipot, we're thinking of shells that surround the sparks of light. They can't absorb the sparks of light because the light is too strong for them, but they surround it to receive as much of the energy as they can. But here we're looking at the Klipot have created a being, a mirror image of Adam HaRishon. So where they fell into the Klipot, they fell into the same place that they were in Adam. As explained, the spiritually impure world is a mirror version of the spiritually pure world, except in an unholy and impure way. Thus, when the souls fell into the world of impurity, they fell to the level that corresponded to their own. For example, the klipot of the eyes of the nefesh, if they fell from the thighs of the ruach, then they fell into the thighs of the ruach of the klipot. It is from their specific place of exile in the Klipot that the soul sparks must be redeemed. Translator's note. The Hebrew word that have been translated here, when Adam was created, our mutual golem. The implication of the word mutual is that he was lying around lifeless. The word golem will be more familiar from the stories of the creatures that was made by the Maharal of Prague. Whereas God breathed into the lifeless lump that was Adam, the spirit of the Maharal imbued the spirit of life into a lifeless lump by the use of holy divine names. Our bodies are golems. What's the difference between a golem and us? God injected our consciousness into us, and we injected our consciousness into the golem. This is how we become godlike. Thus, the literal translation of the Midrash at this point is as follows. When Adam was a lifeless, unformed lump, concerning that time it is written, and the Lord God formed the man out of the dust from the ground, and he breathed to him a living soul. It was at that moment also, according to our Midrash, that God manifested the potential of all the human souls for posterity that would be descended from Adam, the primordial man. The verse quoted by the Midrash from the book of Job, "Where were you when I founded the earth?" The Hebrew word for where is epho, comprised of the letters Aleph, Yud, Pei, He. The Midrash notes that these letters can also be read as ephah. An ephah is an amount of dough that has not yet been kneaded into the shape of a loaf that will be baked. Therefore, the verse, when it is read with the indication ephah, also hints at this moment, when Adam was a lifeless lump like an ephah. This is the moment when God gives form and life to the lifeless lump and manifests the potential souls of the entire human race the moment when Adam was created. My commentary. Above it refers to a midrash that speaks of the bird nest. In the Zohar it speaks of the bird nest as the location where the soul of Mashiach waits. It also hints to the reality teaching that in order to complete one's tikkun, one must know the soul root from which they come within Adam and Chava. Without that information, it is impossible to know what one did incorrectly in their last incarnation. Most of a person's life is spent searching for this information. There are three shortcuts taught within the frame of Kabbalah: Hebrew astrology, face and palm reading, and knowledge of the race of angels, knowledge of the races of angels. Actually, all three tools are necessary to find the complete answer. I do teach all three tools along with Hebrew meditation techniques that are needed to utilize the three tools above. Chapter 3, Section 3, Additional Blemishes. Cain and Abel, the sons of Adam, committed their own sin in addition to that of their father, and thus caused their sparks to become more deeply immersed in the Klipot. From this statement, you have to realize that our souls are not as pure as we think they are. They are purer than the body. But our souls are still immersed in the Klipot. And it's only through our actions of mitzvot that we tear off the klipot and free ourselves from this impurity. Cain murdered Abel, and according to the Midrash, Abel had previously looked at the divine presence as it descended to consume his sacrifice on the altar. Gazing such at the divine presence was deemed a grave sin and warranted Abel the penalty of death. Thus they caused further damage and blemish to the soul sparks that came from the soul of Adam that were originally damaged by the sin of the first man. And then they made them worse, meaning deeper into the clipot. My commentary. In Kabbalah, a person does not die until the nightly court case approves his leaving and sets the time to leave. Abel was approved for leaving the world for many reasons. The one cited above from the Midrash is only one idea. Another idea is that Abel was too involved with the physical and lost sight of his spiritual work. Something that happens to many people. This comes from the word, phrase, verse in the Torah that teaches that Abel also brought a sacrifice. Also, the word also implies it is an afterthought, not truly important. For someone on the spiritual level of the son of Adam, this would be a grievous mistake. However, in each generation, some of the sparks reincarnate into the world to become rectified. That is good news. All do not end up like Cain and Abel. There is tikkun, there is correction. My commentary. This commentary does not make sense. How did Cain and Abel end up? It was always tikkun, since Hashem is merciful. Cain and Abel, the sons of Adam, increased the damage and the blemish of the soul sparks. The level of the quarry of the souls of a particular generation can be either that of the sparks of the head or the eyes, etc. The quarry, as in a rock quarry, is a place in the soul structure of Adam from which the soul sparks are derived. This varies by the generation. It is like a spiritual quarry from which the sparks of the souls of a particular generation are hewn. Some of these sparks reincarnate and become rectified, but some of them reincarnate, become more blemished because of the sin, and fall deeper into the clipot, like the souls of Cain and Abel, the sons of Adam. My commentary. This helps us to understand Rabbi Teicher's comment above that I already commented upon, but still it is incomplete, since even when we fall deeper into the klipot, we still have the potential to produce a tikkun, a correction. Remember, in spirituality, we go down in order to go higher, a truly amazing spiritual law. I'm going to stop here. We have 5 more minutes, but this next section is very complex. So I'd like to pick it up when we're fresh. Does anybody have any questions?
Yes, I do.
Go ahead, Laura.
Are you going to explain these three tools, the Hebrew astrology and the faith and palm reading and the knowledge of the ways of the angels, to the
I do teach those all the time. In the basic class, I teach them. I don't teach them in depth. And yes, I will teach them in depth as people have the need or have the desire for learning this. I've had many, many students come to me to teach me angels, and yet when I start to teach them angels, it doesn't fit their perspective, their personal agenda of their angels. I was reading a book written by a Kabbalist about the angels, and it is really not in context. It is very much different than my understanding of the angels. There are 10 races of angels. So when someone says that they see Mikhail, Michael, or Uriel, or Raphael, they're not seeing the person Raphael. They're seeing a human being component of the race called Raphael, just like I'm a component of the race called human beings. Many people have great difficulty with that truth. What do you mean I'm not speaking to Michael? What do you mean I'm not talking to Raphael? You are talking to entities, but you're talking to entities who have been given permission to fool you. And people don't want to hear that. So I've never really taught about angels completely for the simple reason that I've never had a student who truly wanted to know the information. And that's not to imply that it's wrong or that anybody on this call or recording doesn't want to know the information. It's just there. When it comes to face and hand reading, what is the reason that you want to learn it? I teach face and hand reading so that you will know yourself. Not that you can use it to judge another person. As, yes, I teach certain things so that you can protect yourself from a dishonest person. But to truly, truly understand face and hand reading at the level that it teaches us, you can't judge other people. You can only use it to learn where you are. What is your spiritual level? But that's not complete for many people. I had one student who I said, it's going to take you 20 years to learn this. And they said, no, that's too long. I'll find somebody who will give me a shortcut. My answer was, Baruch Hashem. And they will find somebody that will give them a shortcut. But it won't be a shortcut to the truth. It won't be a shortcut to true understanding of face and hand reading. And the tikkun of an individual, you've sent me your astrological data. I'm building that, but I'm building it for a bunch of people. I just don't have the time to do it all at once. But it'll get there. As soon as, whether it's me that's the blockage or the person is the blockage, I don't know. Part of it is me, of course. But part of it is the other person. They don't yet have the merit to have the information. But as soon as they do, as soon as they do their form of teshuvah, they'll receive it because I'll be given permission to release it. Did I answer your question, Laura?
Yes, you did. Thank you.
Are there any other questions?
No, I don't have other questions.
Any Anybody else?
I'd like to know a little, I'd like to know a little bit more about the persons with their animals. Because can you say a little bit more about that?
Well, I'm trying to remember something that one of my teachers told me. And it was very funny at the time. And I've forgotten it. But I will struggle with it and try and relate to it. Why do you think we live in a society that makes people run after the animals to pick up their crap? We don't think of it like that. Oh, it's on a physical level. It's dirty for people. It's not clean on the grass for people. So I'm being sharing by running after the animal and picking up its crap. And, of course, there's a law that makes me do it under a penalty of a fine of whatever dollars in each area. Every city is different. But we don't ask the question, why is that happening? Was it true? When I was growing up, those laws weren't in place. They didn't apply to the generation that was living then. Why do you have a particular animal? Let's even go take it outside of the living concept. Why do you have a particular couch in your home? Do you think you bought the couch? What's cause and what's effect? You did not buy that couch. Let me rephrase that. Of course you bought the couch. You did not choose that couch. The couch chose you. The couch, as the fulfillment of a desire, wanted to be revealed. And so, therefore, it caused you to purchase it so that it could fulfill your desire to have a couch. The same thing applies to the animals. Little children, younger children, are closer to their keter. They're closer to their beginning, to their source. Why do little children want animals in their life? Do you see 80 and 90-year-old men and women walking animals? Oh, they can't because they have arthritis, or they have this, or they have that. I can tell you, my parents wouldn't let me have an animal. I think I was 14 years old when I was allowed to have a dog, a mongrel dog, a mixed race dog. And when I went away to college, I had to give him away. I think about that dog all the time. And I'm not a lover of animals. I wouldn't let my kids have it. I don't want the responsibility. I don't want to be running after them to pick up their crap. What more would you like to know about people and their animals? How they begin to look like their animals after 5 and 10 years? How married couples begin to look like each other after 5 and 10 years? It's all related to what we're studying in this reincarnation class. and it will all be revealed through the process. Why did the Ari write, or Rabbi Chaim Vital record, the teaching in this order? It's not coincidence. It's not just what he remembered in the order he remembered it. There's a consciousness behind why it's revealed in this order. Many times my commentary reveals things that are out of order, because I think you need to understand it. But do I know better than the Ari or Rabbi Chaim Vital? Of course not. So I'm very careful when I do that. And even then, it doesn't mean I'm right. Only time will tell. Do you understand it better than if I didn't give you the commentary? Only you can answer that question. So what more do you want to know about the animals? What kind of animal that you pick is an indication of the desire to receive, because the animal is actually choosing you. It's the animal is the fulfillment of a desire, because the animal is actually spiritually higher than you are. But in this part of the process, the animal is deeper into the klipot, so we can't sense that. Enough said or not?
I just see lots of things. I live in a new neighborhood, fairly new houses, and almost everybody has dogs. Some have 3 and 4, and, you know, they walk them every afternoon, and exactly what you say. Some don't pick up the poop. Some do. There's a lady that goes around with her dog, and she has a little bag, and as he does his business, she picks it up. And then I have another friend that has birds, has dogs, you know, several of them. And she cooks the animals just as if they were human, you know, not just dog food or cat food. And I mean, she's got birds, she's got fish, she's got dogs, she's got cats, she's got ferrets. You know, it mystifies me, you know. I don't have an animal, but we did when our children were little.
What was the
but we always just had one. We always just had one animal.
What was the purpose of having an animal when your children were little?
Well, I just remember my husband brought this.
You're going to justify why you had the animal by telling me a physical thing, a physical reason. Basically, most people answer that question, well, how else do children learn responsibility? And that's very true. Having an animal will teach a child responsibility. Except what happens most of the time, or a lot of the time, the child doesn't walk the animal. The parents do. Human beings are not rational. They just pretend to be rational. That's really the relationship of the animal to the person. There's a soul relationship between that, the soul in that animal, and the soul in that person. They come from the same soul, the same soul spark. But Don't tell that to somebody. They'll call you crazy. They'll become offended. You think I'm an animal? So the Kabbalists don't reveal this information. Because it can be abused in so many different ways. Any other questions?
I actually have a question that stems from the previous question.
Go ahead, Nathaniel.
Okay. What if this makes sense, what if you, like, in for instance, I'm not an animal person at all, but somehow I have a severe, you know, allergies to, animal dander, fur, things like that. I ended up developing a liking to particular types of animals, like out of what I assume to be nowhere. One through a gift that was given to me, and then one through an encounter where a friend ended up acquiring a new pet, and somehow the pet, like you said, chose me, which I thought, wow, this cat is like drawn or whatever. What is does that stem from the same basis, that there's that root soul? Mm-hmm.
Absolutely.
I'm sorry? Okay.
Yes,
so
it stems from the same roots. It's showing that animal has an affinity with your soul. The soul of that animal has an affinity with your soul.
So even
now,
if you're pushing it away. I'm sorry, go ahead.
Excuse me, don't you still have the cat?
No, I don't have one. That's the thing. The cat belongs to a friend. Years ago, I had my mom, yes, did, and I developed severe allergies, so I never had one myself, and I just kept away from that.
What it's saying is that aspect of your cocoon takes a greater amount of binding by striking. Let me give you an example. I've shared with you that when I was first born, I spent the first 11 months in an oxygen crib. At the time, my sisters, who were 6 and 9 years older than I am, had animals. I don't know what kind, but I know they had animals. And they had I came home from the hospital in this oxygen crib, and they had to get rid of their animals. And it was their cocoon, because prior to this, they wanted desperately to have a baby brother. They constantly talked to my mother and father about having a baby brother. And so when their baby brother was brought home, he came with baggage attached. He made them give up something in order to receive something. Many lessons in life. That's part of the tikkun. It's part of the correction. Now, I'm not addressing what is the specific tikkun of an individual, but in my case of my sisters, they didn't merit having a baby brother until they gave up something. They sacrificed a part of themselves, just like we have to sacrifice a part of ourselves when we pray. You want to connect to the Creator? You have to give up some animal aspect of yourself. Any other questions? I will say one other thing about animals. My particular tycoon, my north node is in Taurus, and the tycoon of people with a north node in Taurus is to grow to the level of consciousness of the Ahavta L'Reacha Kamocha, loving your neighbor as yourself. And just for the record, so nobody thinks I'm special, I'm very far from that level. But one of those aspects that would help me grow to that level would be to love an animal. By the same token, if I love the animal, I'm not loving the human. It keeps me from reaching the goal. And you will find that many times people have three or four animals so that they don't have to love other human beings. They don't have to interact with other human beings. They interact with the animal. Any other questions?
I'm thinking my mother passed away because, with lung cancer. And I remember the surgeon asking me after her surgery if she had been around birds because she had picked up a bacteria from birds, and she did. She raised birds. I don't have a question. It's just the thought that came into my mind when you said that I hadn't thought about in a long time. She passed away in 85.
I wrote in my email a few weeks ago about how I didn't write it, but I quoted another student of Kabbalah who was explaining that the term bacteria and virus is a scientific word for darkness and negativity.
Mm-hmm. Oh, wow.
We don't act for cause and effect. We think we see cause and effect, and when you really look at your answer to that question, it's talking about physicality.
Mm-hmm.
That's really what I'm trying to wake you all guys up about. And it's not because you're bad people, it's because that's human beings. Satan has a good hold on us, on all of us. When you start to ask the question, what is the cause? You're starting to loosen his hold.
When you begin to think that you see which part of Adam's body is your soul root, where do you go from there?
Well,
what would be the next step? I guess I could reword it that way.
It depends on the part of the body. As an example, if the soul root is coming from the throat of Adam, and clearly in a action that is metaphorically talking about eating, the throat has a very significant part of that. The throat allowed the food to pass through, correct?
Mm-hmm.
So the throat has a very significant action, whereas the part of the body called the legs, their action was walking up to the tree. But what is the harm in walking up to the tree? Well, they shouldn't have walked up. They should have said no. Again, all of Tikkun relates to binding by striking, not being reactive. But it depends on the part of the body that you're referring to. And if you don't want to share it in this forum where other people are listening, call me and tell me what part of the body you're talking about, and we'll discuss what is the next step for you.
I don't mind telling. I feel like it's the heel of the foot.
Well, the heel of the foot is the generation. We are the last generation, which means we come from the left heel of Adam.
Well, it's the left foot I see. You know, third eye bit.
Yeah.
In my head.
They're all coming from the left heel of Adam. The Kabbalists have been writing about it for 500 years. We all come from the left heel of Adam. Well, what is the, you know, the purpose of knowing that has to do with what does the heel do with respect to the metaphorical story of eating from the tree of knowledge, good and evil. The leg, we've discussed it, was walking up to it. But the heel is the malchut of the malchut of the malchut of that action of walking up. So your correction is travel. All of our corrections is travel. That's why we live in a generation where there are airplanes and boats, cruise ships. You think they had cruise ships 600 years ago? Why did they develop in this generation? Because there are people who need to make a correction by going on a cruise ship. Remember what was in the news a few weeks ago? How wonderful the cruise ship was in the Gulf of Mexico?
Mm-hmm.
Where the motor burned out or something burned out and they were, you know, took them forever to get back without water. Living in muck and food. And then do you remember the plane that crashed in the Andes and people ended up being cannibals to survive? This is all correction issues. That's why it happened. Were they supposed to eat those people? Or were they supposed to die? I don't know. What is, some of them were supposed to die, some of them were supposed to eat the people. I don't know. I don't know what the issue, you know. But if you think about it, I know if I were sitting with one of those people and they were my student, we would arrive at the understanding for them what was the action they should have taken. But we are all from the left heel of Adam. You know, take a look at the Hebrew word heel, Akev. It's the root of Jacob's name. Understand it. Ayin Kuf Bet. I haven't even looked at it in a long time, but what came right back to me, Ayin Kuf Bet. Well, there's a monkey, which is the Hebrew word kuf, separating the Ayin Bet, separating the connection to God, separating the power of control for the physical world. Who's the monkey? Does that apply to your correction? Yes, an animal. Does that apply to your correction? I think you'll find it does, and I think you know, you have to remember you have a lifetime, and it takes a lifetime to determine what your correction is. The tools are there as hints. They're not going to give you the answer, just hinting at the answer.
And Koof is the double agent. So.
That is correct. Koof is feeding the Satan. But Koof knows to feed the Satan only enough energy to keep him alive, not to make him fat. The rest of us haven't learned that truth. We keep feeding him and feeding him and feeding him and feeding him some more. Any other questions? You have all have a beautiful week. I hope you'll join me in my class on Thursday at 10 when we're going to be talking about the prayer on the menorah prayer, on the menorah psalm. I hope you're going to join me on Sunday at 10:30 a.m. when we're going to talk about Jerusalem Day. What's the energy of that particular holiday, which nobody's ever heard of? Next Monday, we'll be talking about what does it mean to be kosher? What are kosher regulations? What's that all about? And next Tuesday at 8 o'clock, we'll continue our discussion of advanced reincarnation, starting with section 4 of chapter 3. You all have a beautiful week.
Okay. Thank you. You too. Good night. Bye-bye.
Bye-bye.